This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. In studio are Mitch Kokai of the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch, here to discuss the week in politics. Hi, guys.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
On Thursday, a federal three-judge panel appointed a special master to evaluate new political maps. Listeners will remember, previous state legislative districts were struck down for being illegally racially gerrymandered. New maps were ordered and drawn this summer. The court has not ruled that any of these new districts are illegal. It is just first bringing in an expert to review and potentially make recommendations. Rob, I can already hear the left yelling victory and the right shouting about activist judges. Is it too early yet to tell if this is a significant development?
I think it's a significant development. It's a little too early to say what kind of ultimate result it will present. I think the plaintiffs are moderately encouraged by this development. They sound optimistic, that they're hopeful that this will be a person of some character and quality who will bring a new level of fairness to the drawing of maps in North Carolina. But it's one small step in a very long process that promises to continue to go on for a while yet.
It's almost certain that bringing on a special master means that the three-judge panel is going to strike down some of the districts. They've already signaled in the order naming the master that they have concerns about two state Senate districts and seven state House districts. So it's very likely that when the real ruling comes down, it will strike down those districts. And they signal in their order that one of the reasons they bring on the special master is anticipating the upcoming election season. They want to get this ball rolling once their order comes down so new maps could be in place and not disrupt the election process.
And as a reminder, I don't think there's anybody that expects Democrats to take a majority back in either chamber next year. The big question here really is specific to the House, and it's specific to the supermajority. How many seats can the Democrats pick up? Can they effectively give the governor a veto back, a veto with some teeth? Any other reaction from either of you on this redistricting development this week?
Well, I think that the main thing is that the court is signaling again, as it already had signaled, that it was not going to take on the General Assembly's maps as redrawn and say, yes, these are fine, that they are going to strike down the maps to some extent. So that will mean that we'll see some sort of new maps, which will probably extend the legal process because the General Assembly will challenge this and try to get the Supreme Court to take it up again. It'll be interesting to see whether the Supreme Court says yes or says no, the federal court is doing exactly what it should do, and let's let this play out.
Yeah, it's a three-judge panel, judges appointed by Republican presidents and Democratic presidents. They found a consistent pattern of racial gerrymandering. It seems almost a certainty that we will have some improvement to the maps in North Carolina. Hopefully it will go forward with improved maps that will provide for fairer elections. We've been working without fair maps for, 8 years now.
Meanwhile, Representative Bill Brisson, a Republican in the North Carolina House, announced that he is officially joining the Republican Party. Now, this isn't surprising to people who spend time within the North Carolina political bubble, as Brisson regularly votes with conservatives, and the switch has been rumored for a while. Mitch, what does this tell us, if anything, about the state of the Democratic Party and potential fractures here in North Carolina?
I don't know that it says as much about fractures as it does about the changes within the Democratic Party. I think if you look back 10, especially 20 years, you would have seen a lot more Bill Brissons in the Democratic Party, people who were fairly conservative in most respects, but also willing to go along with the spending priorities and the attention to government programs that the rest of the Democratic caucus would. You've seen fewer and fewer folks of that sort, and people like Bill Brisson have either gotten out of politics or they've switched to become Republicans. By the same token, as you saw decades ago, more moderate and liberal Republicans, there are fewer and fewer of those these days. Both parties are becoming more ideologically pure, whether that's good or not.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. We've had, when I came to North Carolina in 1992, there were a lot of Republicans who worked with liberal lobbyists on issues, who those essentially non-existent now. And Brisson has been voting with the Republicans for essentially a dozen years, almost all of his time in Raleigh. So I'm not sure it says a lot about, I think it says something about the continuing divide in the two parties. And you know, the bottom line, I think, for Democrats is you can't be pro-Trump and be a Democrat at this point. Trump has really, I think, expedited this process, expedited this divide in the country. We're seeing it in Washington as well. And you're either with him or against him. And if you're with him, if you're against him or with him, you really can't be a member of the Democratic Party.
One name from either of you, totally putting you on the spot here. Someone in North Carolina politics, could be an elected official, doesn't have to be, I suppose. Someone who's going to bring people back to the middle over the next 10 years.
Well, it's interesting that the mayoral race is taking place in Raleigh right now, where Nancy McFarlane, an independent, is being challenged by an African-American Democrat with support from the Republican Party, actually. And I think that the Republicans are fearful that McFarlane is the kind of person that might actually be that kind of person who could bring folks together. So I think that's part of the reason they're helping to fund her opponent.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Nancy McFarlane. I think the biggest thing you learn from that Raleigh mayoral race is that Nancy McFarlane's been trying to walk the line between being a progressive liberal, but then also not being officially a Democrat so that Republicans would find her more palatable. Strangely enough, I think one person who probably could have and may still be able to bring some folks together was Roy Cooper, who for years and years was sort of a middle-of-the-road Democrat, didn't seem to be objectionable to anyone. He's really, since coming into office, partly because the Republicans egged him on, but he's been attack dog against the Republicans rather than being someone who wanted to work with both parties. But I think if at some point the fights with the General Assembly die down a little bit, you might see Roy Cooper move back to being sort of the middle-of-the-road guy who appeals to a lot of different people, and that would be bad news for Republicans, good news for Democrats, and might bring a lot of people together.
Yeah, I don't think that Cooper has really changed much at all. To me, he's still espousing the same policies he did when he was a state lawmaker many years ago. What's changed is that the Republican Party has shifted far right and is, you know, even before he came into office, was trying to undermine his authority. I don't think that's an ideological, really, divide. That is a divide, just a power battle right now where he's trying to preserve his control over his office.
But to be fair, and look at it from both sides of the spectrum or both sides of the two-party conversation, you guys have both been here for a long time. When Roy Cooper was in the House and in the Senate, there wasn't as much of a progressive voice in this state, was there? My observation as a relative newbie and a relative outsider is that Roy Cooper is getting pulled more to the left, more strongly to the left than Democratic leaders in the state have been in previous generations.
Well, I will say that the Democratic Party was much more conservative when I came here in the early 90s. I can specifically remember sitting in a committee meeting in which conservative Democratic senators punished Roy Cooper in that committee meeting and sort of forced him to make a motion on a bill that they were for and that he really wasn't for, as a way of sort of winning his, you know, fealty to their control over the Democratic Party. And so I'd say that that has definitely changed.
Yeah, I think Cooper is being pulled a little bit more to the left. I still would say he's not the most progressive politician out there. If you looked at the folks who were looking at that 2016 governor's race, one of the reasons that Democrats liked Roy Cooper was because they thought he could win. But if they had had their ideal candidate, I don't know that they would have chosen him.
Interesting. One more question, and this is not a North Carolina issue, but I want to touch on it. This will be a web extra, just to be clear. Another significant announcement came, of course, on Capitol Hill this week when U.S. Senator Jeff Flake, Republican of Arizona, announced that he will not seek a second term in 2018. Flake, who we should very much note, was facing a tough primary challenge, delivered an impassioned speech on the floor of the Senate in which he said he has simply had enough. You guys buy it? Why is Flake resigning in your opinions, and what does it tell us about the Republican divides and fractures?
I mean, I think it's because of Donald Trump. I mean, Jeff Flake is a Reagan conservative Republican. Right after he issued this blistering attack on Trump, he went and voted for a policy that, you know, is going to favor Wall Street bankers over average consumers. He's voting really right down the line with he and Corker both of whom have attacked Trump. So it doesn't seem to me as much of any kind of an ideological divide in the Republican Party. It's about Donald Trump and his poisoning of American politics.
Yeah, certainly in terms of the ideology, there's not a whole lot of difference between Corker and Flake and many of their colleagues within the Senate in the Republican caucus, but there is a strong divide within the Republicans among those who support Donald Trump and among those who don't support Donald Trump, either because of his personality, his approach to the office, the fact that he's the tweeter in chief rather than being presidential.
Right.
So there's quite a bit of divide over that. And Jeff Flake is one of those people who would rather approach issues from the philosophical perspective. He would love to sit down with Rob and have a big back and forth debate, but not call him names, not engage in any of the types of things that we have seen from the president that that a lot of people on the right find distasteful.
But unfortunately, of course, he is facing a primary opposition, and that those kinds of Trumpist, if you will, candidates seem to be becoming more numerous in the Republican Party.
Mitch, do you think that there need to be other U.S. senators to step up and try to get on a similar stage or platform that Jeff Flake has been on? To his credit or discredit, depending on, I guess, where you stand, where he's been for a while now.
I don't know that there is a need. I mean, I think that some of them probably will if they end up coming under fire from President Trump as well, because basically when he has found fault with someone, he's not held back. He's basically attacked anyone who has stood against him on any issue, and I think Flake just had enough of it.
Is it good for the future of American politics if more U.S. senators and more U.S. House members stand up to President Trump, specifically Republicans?
Oh, I think you certainly would see better discourse if the Republicans decided that they don't want to be the party emulating Donald Trump in every respect. Now, there are a lot of things that the Trump administration has done, many of which that don't get as much attention, that Republicans tend to like. I mean, the regulatory rollbacks, putting Neil Gorsuch on the high court. Those are some things that Republicans like about what Donald Trump has done. But yes, in terms of the discourse, the way that he treats the media, the way that he treats other people, the way that he uses his tweets to bully folks, I think there are a lot of people within the Republican Party who would like to see that excised out of the party, Jeff Flake being one of them, and Flake didn't think he could do it as a member of the Senate anymore and probably wouldn't have the chance after this next election.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's their patriotic duty to stand up to Trump and his serial dishonesty and his really profaning the office of the presidency. And so, yes, I think it would be good for the Republican Party, it'd be good for the country if Republicans stand up united, even if they agreed with policies like Mitch likes in deregulating business and such. This man who occupies the White House is a tremendous cancer on our country, and I think it's their patriotic duty to stand up.
Feel free to disagree with this. To me, the three people in the U.S. Senate who have pushed back most vociferously against Trump are Senators from Arizona, McCain and Flake, and Bob Corker of Tennessee. Corker's not running for re-election. Flake's not running for re-election. McCain, right, sadly, is terminally ill. He's not, barring some medical miracle, he's not going to be in the Senate years from now.
Right.
What concerns do you have that these resignations, specifically Corker and Flake, are some sort of like
surrender?
Tacitly providing Trump and to a different extent, Steve Bannon, with some sort of fuel from having other Republicans speak out?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're purging the – you could make a very strong argument that Trump and the Bannons of the world are purging the Republican Party of people who even are willing to speak up and have some modicum of decency in political discourse, and that's a dangerous trend for our country. It's a very dangerous trend. So, it concerns me in the respect that neither one of them seems willing to stay and fight.
I think they certainly are engaging in a purge. What remains to be seen is whether that will hold. I mean, a lot of people who are dealing with President Trump from right of center are doing so on an instrumental basis. He's the president. He's a Republican. He's pushing some policies they like. They're going to put up with what they don't like to the extent that they have to. And once he's gone, their hope is that his style and brand of politics go with him. Now, whether that's true or not, or whether the next Republican will be just like Donald Trump remains to be seen.
Yeah.
Rob Schofield writes for NC Policy Watch, part of the North Carolina Justice Center. Mitch Kokai is a political analyst with the John Locke Foundation. Thank you both.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.